Now, Galway GP joins me on the line, issuing a warning in relation to laughing gas following an increase in patients suffering nerve damage from the gas in question. Dr. Martin Daly joins me on the line from Ballygar. Dr. Daly, good morning to you.
How are you, Keith? How are things?
Good. Good. Thanks to you. Thanks for joining us. What exactly is laughing gas? And it's not like helium that gives you a squeaky voice, but you shouldn't be inhaling either. Where can you get this laughing gas and what damage can it do?
Yeah, well, I suppose just to start, nitrous oxide, which is laughing gas, is a very useful anaesthetic and has been used by medical practitioners and midwives for many decades, especially in the delivery room when women are giving birth to child. And a very, very useful anaesthetic agent. However, it's also used in the food industry as a food for things like making ice cream. And that, so it's very useful in that, in the food industry, and so they're the legitimate uses for it. However, it is a drug that is quite popular in terms of abuse worldwide. It's seen as one of the top 10 drugs that may be abused. It certainly has psychoactive properties, and it can cause euphoria, giggling, altered consciousness, and that if it's taken recreationally, when it is taken, so it's easily accessible and it's cheap and it's bought often on the internet, it comes in the form of canisters in a gas, and that they're emptied into balloons and people inhale them, and you get this transient short acting high. Now, the issue, I suppose, is the abuse of this drug. So people who are using it very regularly and are using large amounts of it, and it certainly can have very deleterious effects on people's health. So it can cause personality change, emotional disorders such as anxiety and depression and mania. And obviously, if you're already predisposed or have an existing issue with anxiety, depression or mania, it's going to make that worse, and you'd certainly be more susceptible to having a problem. It can make people impulsive and aggressive. It can cause hallucinations, delusions. And of course, again, in susceptible people, it can cause acute psychosis, meaning that people lose touch with reality. Yeah. It also causes physical symptoms such as neurological symptoms such as numbness in the hand. So it has an effect on the nervous system as well. So again, it's like any substance, when it is inappropriately used and abused, it has a downside.
But from listening to you, and it's a very good analogy and explanation that you've given to me, but I mean, if it's used as an anaesthetic agent, but that's in hospitals, that's done in a controlled environment. In an uncontrolled environment, what are people doing to the cells in their brains?
Yeah, well, I think that that's the point. In a controlled environment, you're using it for its pain relief properties. And of course, someone who's in the labor room delivering a child is being monitored constantly. And it's for a short period of time, and it's a once-off episode. It's not repeated prolonged use, which is what's happening in the recreational side. And it has become more popular here because during COVID, when there was a difficulty perhaps in obtaining other drugs such as cannabis and cocaine, it became an easier way of getting your drug delivered to your door in a legitimate sense. So people were ordering it online, and whilst it's not illegal under the Misuse of Drugs Act, it is illegal to sell it for its psychoactive properties, but it does appear to be very easily available. And I've seen reports in the papers, just keeping an eye on it, of the revenue making discoveries of large amounts of canisters being illegally imported into the country. So it is an issue. But I suppose it's an issue in the context of the overall drug issue. And I mean, I know you have me talking about nitrous oxide this morning, but I mean, I live in Ballygar, yeah, in a rural area. Our biggest problem is cocaine. And we have a wave of cocaine in rural areas. So I know in city areas, people expect that there are drug abuse problems and congregations of people using and abusing drugs. But what we're seeing in rural areas for the last 4 or 5 years, but with no real let up, is the use and misuse of cocaine and all the social problems that are arising from that. So we have situations where we have drug dealers calling to people, country people in the middle of the country, threatening to harm them, damage their houses and their property if they don't settle the drug bills of their children. So, you know, yes, nitrous oxide is an issue. Yes, we need to warn people about it. It is one of the pieces of the jigsaw of the whole drug abuse problem that we have at the moment in Ireland. But I have to say, cocaine is the biggest problem in Ireland at the moment, and it is causing untold damage to our young people, and the and also the ongoing effects it's having on their social lives and their families and their parents.
I don't know, and I'm glad that you broadened it out, because I was going to ask you about drug use and drug abuse as well. But I mean, I've come across parents who've made contact with me here who've had to go to the credit union to raise a loan to pay for drug debts. But in rural Ireland, I mean, where you are based in Ballygar, and that, I wouldn't have thought that it would be as prevalent as it is, but that's my naivety and stupidity. But that's very tough on families that are affected by this, because it's not cheap. It's Christmas time. People need as much money as they can. And it must be very difficult on some families.
Well, it's extraordinarily difficult, because if you talk to any of my colleagues in the mental health services, they will say that the problems that they're dealing with, it's one of the single biggest problems they're dealing with, are the effects of cocaine. So people with all sorts of mental health issues, anxiety, depression, psychosis, which requires admission to hospital, families, no proper access to rehab, families having to gather money up to get rehab facilities for their children to go in to try and detox. This is a massive problem. It's at every single rural crossroads in the country. It's in every, I hate saying this, it is probably in every school in the country. It is, and in rural areas, it is also affecting sporting clubs. I know this personally firsthand. I obviously can't disclose, but what I can say to you is that this is an enormous problem, and the bills are quite large. They're not like the publican saying you've run up a bill of 200 euros. These are bills of 2,000-4,000 euros. So people arriving to your home, drug dealers arriving to your parents' home or to people's homes, threatening violence on them if they don't stump up the money immediately. And people aren't going to the Gardaí about this, because they're scared that their children will be physically harmed if they don't get the money together to give it to them. So this is like, I mean, yes, nitrous oxide is an issue. To me, though, the scourge at the moment is cocaine, and it is everywhere.
I came across a situation again in rural Galway recently, Dr. Martin Daly, and where elite sports people went out and they bought a pint at night and they were sipping away at the pint, but they'd only have 2 pints, but they were taking cocaine, and they got the high from the cocaine, but it was seen to be the drink that they were having, because it wasn't traceable in the morning for them, and they didn't wake up with a hangover. Now, these were elite sports people that we're talking about, and it's not anecdotal, it's actually factual information that I got at the time. Now, it's gone back a few months at this stage. Well, that's frightening when you're supping away at the pint, pretending to be, but you're going into the bathroom or wherever you're going, and taking the cocaine in question.
I suppose one of the, I'm glad you highlighted that, one of the issues that has come to my attention from parents is that school-going sports athletes who are training for specific teams using cocaine as the drug of choice because they perceived it to be less likely to put on weight and affect their fitness than alcohol would. And so they were choosing to use cocaine instead of alcohol.
Where do we go, Dr. Martin Daly? What? I mean, we started talking about laughing gas. We've now gone down a road that we need to talk about this. There needs to be an open discussion like you and I are having for parents out there that... Well, I'm sure this morning it would be shocked to think that it could be in a secondary school that their students are going to, their family are going to. And we'll be shocked that it will be in a sporting club.
Well, I suppose we need to put it into context. The vast majority of young people are absolutely brilliant. They're better than we were. Well, I'll speak for myself, better than I was. I think they were better than our generation. They're more confident. They're better educated. They've got better opportunities. You know, I think they're a remarkable group of people.
Absolutely.
But I do think that they're facing major challenges. And with affluence comes things like drugs. Gambling is another thing. Which is affecting a lot of younger people, mainly more in their 20s. But so there are a lot of challenges there. So we have to put it into context. Most people, and I'm not suggesting that they should, but most people, young people who may have come in contact with some form of drugs or that, dabbled and have survived and moved on. But unfortunately, there's a casualty rate, as there has been in the past with alcohol and continues to be so. And it's the casualties that we're seeing, and young people who are remarkably bright have great futures ahead of them and get mired in this drug world where they accumulate debt and they end up being leveraged by very nasty people, and their families are also leveraged. And I do think we need to have, in terms of cocaine use and cocaine dealing and that, we really do need to have a zero tolerance approach to it. And I'm not, I'm one of the biggest fans of the Gardaí and that, but I do think that there's almost a sense that people have given up on this, that they can't, that there's so much of it about that they cannot police it. I wonder if that's really the way we should be going. And in fairness to the Gardaí, that requires political purpose. It requires direction from a higher level.
I was reading a report over the weekend in relation to a European country looking at legalising the likes of cocaine, cannabis and otherwise, so that it can be a controlled substance rather than the drug mules making the vast amount of money that they're making.
Yeah, I don't think cocaine is a drug that anyone has is minded to legalize. Certainly there are jurisdictions like the Netherlands and states in the United States where cannabis has been legalized, and there are big issues around that as well, you know, in terms of it as a drug and control, and in terms of its effect on young people, and it is another drug. But there's probably no perfect solution to this. There's probably maybe needs to be a recognition that we need to decide which drugs are doing the most harm, and can we focus our efforts on that? And it would appear to me that cocaine is a very, very harmful drug.
Dr. Martin Daly, thank you so much, and sorry for taking so much time off your GP time today in Ballygar, but thank you so much for joining us today. Have you been affected by the conversation we have meandered into, because we started talking about laughing gas and the danger of that? If you have, feel free to email comments, comments at galwaybfm.ie. That's comments at galwaybfm.ie, and do so straight away. Some of the comment lines today are quite busy, I have to say. And Keith, could you please let your listeners know that there's two Shetland ponies on the main road near Corrib Truck Centre on the Corrib line. Be careful if you're driving there. And hi Keith, the sum of money was lost on Tuesday afternoon in Dunn Stores in Edward Square. It would have been with a receipt and a refund docket. If anybody found it, could you please contact us here in reception here? And other calls coming in there too. It's 10:21 on the button. We're back just after these.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Keeping it local, working with over 30 new West of Ireland suppliers.
A very good morning to you. Now, quite a few comments coming in relation to that old drugs culture situation out there. We have to be very careful too. We just can't brand everyone with the one brush, but it is, listening to Dr. Martin Daly, I could sense his concerns there, and it is causing concern. Now, though, I was watching Oireachtas TV last week for various reasons. I was watching it. But Fine Gael Senator Sean Kyne spoke in relation to the, he said there are four ministers in the Department of Health, senior and junior, and yet he was talking to Deputy Noonan, is here. I mean, no disrespect to him, but it's something many of us have raised in the past. But for the first time since I came into this house in 2011, I can see a vision from the Sealta Hospital Group for healthcare in the West, And heretofore, we've had internal politics, division and debate about different sites between UHG and Merlin Park with regard to dealing with the infrastructural needs in Galway. It's not just Galway, but the whole region, because University Hospital Galway is a Model 4 hospital for the region. But he went on and on and on from there. And it was a very strong piece, but he joins me on the line today. Senator Sean Kyne, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
You were really, I saw your interaction on the online, but you're very passionate about this. But it's interesting where you say we are in a better place, but yet we need to get movement on this.
Yeah, Keith, I mentioned that you know, since I came into the, and I said at the meeting organized by Professor Kearns in the Salted Hotel a number of weeks ago, which was very well attended by stakeholders and emceed by Sean O'Rourke, that for the first time since 2011, when I came into the House of the Oireachtas, and since 2020 as a member of the Oireachtas Health Committee, I can see a vision from Saolta in relation to what it is they want between Merlin Park and UHG. They have concrete plans. They have indeed even a model done up of what their proposals might look like, where they might fit in on the 38-acre site in UHG. And they have a clear vision presented now to the Minister. And I think that is absolutely welcome. And I think it's very much a step forward. As you know, the elective hospital is expected to go to Cabinet tomorrow, and I'm sure Minister Nocton will have more on that. Minister Donnelly confirmed that at a meeting that we had with him last week. But the proposals in relation to the emergency department, the paediatrics and maternity block, and indeed cancer care, new laboratories and war block there, are all, I think, very, very welcome and are at various stages of progression through the capital plan system.
So what are you expecting to come out of Cabinet, Sean, first off, tomorrow?
Well, look, I leave that to Minister Nocton, but I understand from Minister Donnelly that there will be proposals. Indeed, it's in the media today. There will be proposals in relation to elective hospital and the naming of those elective hospitals, the three of them in Dublin, Galway and Cork. But the as I said, we had a meeting with the Fine Gael reps, had a meeting with Minister Donnelly during the week on the whole plans that he has, or that the Saolta have, for Galway and the region. Ambitious plans, but necessary plans. Mm. And I think one thing that we have in common is in relation to the delays in some of these projects in terms of the timelines for them. And for, I suppose, for a long number of years in relation to value for money, we've had the public spending code, and that's absolutely important to ensure that we get value for money. And I suppose it was strengthened in light of the Children's Hospital and cost overruns that happen in all public projects, whether it be in roads and healthcare and housing. There's often cost overruns. But the problem is that the public spending code is taking so long. It's taking so long to progress projects through the system. You know, for example, when the presently the strategic assessment report for the emergency department and women's and children's block is with the Department of Health, and it'll go to the board of the HSC. But and that is what they call decision gate zero. But decision gate one is actually you know, a preliminary business case. So I mean, we're talking about the ED for how long, and we're at preliminary business case in the public spending code. And then it has to go on to detailed project brief and procurement strategy and then final business case. So these are very elongated in what is an absolutely necessary project. So
I appreciate that, but I mean, you've been very critical when you were a TD and a senator about the delay in putting in planning applications. So are there too many layers involved?
Look, there are, and any project over 100 million goes to this process.
No, I understand that, but I mean, you have estates on one side, you have the department on another side, you have the Saolta Hospital Group on another side, you have the staff on another side. Like, there are so many layers, and estates have to go very slowly, and they go locally, and then they go to Dublin, and it's a slow flipping process.
It is a slow process. That's not to not to comment at all about the planning process, which is part of that. Once approval is given,
but to get to the planning process, Sean, that seems to the blockage. We need to get the rods out on there and clear that blockage. That's where the blockage is.
Yeah, and that's within the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform. And I suppose, as I said, that has been there for a number of years.
And estates as well. You can't throw estates out of this. I mean, estates are heavily involved in this.
They are. It's multi-layered, and unfortunately, it means that there is a very slow progress. And I've said this at Fine Gael parliamentary party meetings. If you talk about even a modest project now, if you start talking about a council or a state agency planning something, you're talking between minimum 5, possibly 7, 8 years to see that project to fruition. And for larger projects where there's debate and delays, that can be up to a decade. And we see that for coastal defences in Galway City, for example, and other projects where it'll effectively take a decade from start to realisation of that project. And that's assuming that everything gets through the planning system and that there are no objections. But what is vital here, Keith, is that there is an absolute commitment in government to progress all of these four different projects: the elective, the ED, the laboratories, and the cancer care centre as well, which is absolutely vital. All of those projects need to be progressed. As I said, we met with the minister. We want to ensure that these projects go as quickly as possible through the various elements of the public spending code. They have to, each project like that will have to go to government 3 times for the preliminary business case, the detailed project brief, and the final business case. But there is a long way to go on delivery of these. But I think, as I said, for the first time, there is a clear vision from SAILTA what it is they want. I think there's political support in relation to these projects, and it will include, before any of your listeners ask, the projects include up to 1,100 car parking spaces underground within the site, I think, because there has been some concern about parking, obviously.
Yeah.
So that would be hugely beneficial as well to the local community around there. So this is a project, I think, that these projects are absolutely vital. We need to progress them, and I know there's cross-party support. I've been engaging with all Muirachtas colleagues in the area. Indeed, we have another meeting on Wednesday morning, I think it is, with the regional Oireachtas members to progress these projects as well. So there's cross-party support to try and ensure these projects move along as quickly as possible for Galway and for the region.
So are you telling me then today, Senator Sean Cain, that even if the green light is given tomorrow from the cabinet meeting, which we would be hopeful that it would, and Galway would be one of these elective hospitals, that I'll be 68, please God, I won't need a hospital between now and then, I'll be 68 when it's finished?
Well, for that project, you'd be talking about 2027 to 2030, I would say.
Yeah, so that's
and
it.
Possibly for other projects as well, under the present system. Now, I think, and certainly Professor Kearns will be of the view, and I think most people will be of the view, that we need to fast-track these healthcare projects to ensure that we can get them through the system faster than that. And that's the challenge, because, as I said, as it stands at the moment, under the public spending code, These are the stages that you have to go through. They're back and forth between HSE, Department of Health, Department of Public Expenditure, government. You have planning. You have any other assessments that are needed as part of that planning application. And thereafter, then you have procurement and tenders. So it is a very, very complex, elongated process to do anything effectively. But in an area like healthcare, which is so vital to well-being, I think there is a strong case now for government to look at how we can speed up this, how we can say, right, this is a project, this is the ED, whatever else. Can we narrow down the delays here to doing it over a couple of months rather than effectively over 2 years and let it go to the next stage? Because I think if we don't do something like that on these projects, then we won't see movement.
All right, Senator Sean Cain, thank you for joining us today on the programme. By the way, congratulations to Mike Cullen to getting through yesterday in Pure Stadium. Well done. I don't know if it's their celebrations there or not. I wasn't in the village at all yesterday, but congratulations to the team in Mike Cullen there. Quick commercial break. We're back just after these. The comment lines are open if you want to get through to us on 091-770-077. Let me just give you some of them that have come into us today. Somebody said, over the last 3 weeks, I've not been able to buy a City Tribune. I live in Johishka, and they're not selling them in Tesco Express. Can you sort that out? We will send that over to Dave O'Connell, so we will. And Keith, happy birthday to a very special lady, Mary Geary, Clareview Park, from all of her friends as well. And Keith, this caller said, Bridget Gavin and Sarah McLaughlin are organising a fundraiser for Cope Galway Homeless on the 11th of December in the Foyles Hotel in Clifton. There will also be an art auction there as well. Can you give that a quick mention for us as well? I certainly can. And Keith, have you watched the Sean Quinn episode on RTE? Can you just tell me from there, have you watched it? And another caller said, I don't know if anybody watched the Sean Quinn on RTE last week. He came out of it, terrible statements. He said, people on the borders. No, that wasn't him. That was Alan Jukes, and he's apologised since. And that was Alan Jukes, and he has. Because I know John has zero interest in it, I would think. So I watched 1 hour of it on Thursday night when she was going to a drumming class. And then I watched a half an hour of it on Saturday morning, and I have to watch the end of. I want to watch the other. I get it done. From what I've seen, you know, it's been written about extensively over the weekend. But what I've seen, it shows the human side. It shows the man himself. It shows the hurt that he's gone through. Would I come to any conclusions? No. It's just an awful lot of money, lads. In our wildest dreams, we couldn't have lost it. If in our wildest dreams. You couldn't imagine losing so much money. And it's just, yeah, it's very interesting. If you haven't watched it, a lot of topics and discussions on it right across the country on it, on high stools over the weekend. People were discussing it, I believe. Not that I was on one, but they were discussing it. And yeah, it's going to be something interesting. And all of yesterday's papers, from the priest who said what he said from the pulpit, was quoted. There's other colour pieces right across the Sunday Times, Sunday Independent, Sunday World, any Sunday paper that I got my hands on yesterday that I read. There's a lot of commentary on it, let's put it that way, from there. But yeah, I will get to see the end of it. If you've missed it, by the way, you can go to the RT player and you can get it from there.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco, standing up for joy this Christmas.
Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. The University of Galway last Friday launched its first annual report on widening participation, and the Access Centre's new office is officially opened and was done so by Minister Anne Rabbitt. Let me go to the head of the Access Centre, indeed, Imelda Byrne, who sits opposite me today. I just want to transfer your microphone around. If I did it properly, it would be fine. Imelda, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
Congratulations. You're head of the Access Centre, and there's a key message now. Daniel will join us as well shortly. The key message there is that people can go to the Access Centre for information if they didn't make it into college at some stage.
Yes, that's it, Keith. And first of all, I suppose I'd like to thank you for all the work that you have done with us over the past 20 years in trying to, you know, get the message out to the general public that if you have the potential or the desire or the interest to go to university, that there is an alternative pathway. And I suppose, Keith, when I started talking to you almost 20 years ago, I was in the post of as Access Officer. And that was specifically around targeting people to come onto our pre-university Access course.
Yeah.
And I suppose over the last 20 years, there were other people appointed in the university, the disability officer and also the mature student officer. And for the past number of years, I suppose there's been a restructuring and a process whereby all of these officers are now a part of what is the Access Centre, all under the umbrella of the Access Centre. And I suppose what I'm saying to you, Keith, today and to all your listeners is that if there's anybody out there that were open for business again, the last 2 years with the pandemic, it was very difficult to engage with people either publicly with information evenings or attending, you know, visiting schools or the further education sector here, GRETB, which we work closely with. So, anybody out there, an individual who felt they have the potential but didn't get the chance for whatever reason, whether it was through lack of supports at home, you know, personal situations, you know, illness, disability, ethnicity, that we are saying we're open for business and we'd like you to come up to the University of Galway. The Access Centre is located in RSE Cahill, which is near the Bailey Allen Hall, which I think everybody knows. So yes, that's my message today, Keith.
Yeah, but I mean, somebody could be listening to us at home and they had to give up school or otherwise not go to college because of home situations, or mom or dad mightn't be well, or the farm needs to be looked after. They may have their own family now and they may want to go back. There's no age barrier in this.
No, I suppose that word you use, Keith, is really excellent in terms of barriers. You know, what we are trying to do and have been doing, I think, successfully, which Daniel will tell you now shortly with the data that we've produced, is that we are trying to remove barriers for everybody. Just because somebody had a situation from birth or circumstances of birth and beyond that prevented them, as I said, from reaching their potential in the traditional type of leave insert, yes, there are ways and means of getting in, either by doing an access course, by doing the HEAR scheme, the DARE scheme, applying as a mature student. I suppose the other important thing to say, Keith, like, is that, you know, we remove the barriers so that people can come in, but also we try to remove the barriers in terms of successful participation and successful outcomes, because as I'm always saying, access without success is not access. So yes, barriers from entry, barriers throughout your undergraduate studies and postgraduate studies, and hopefully into employment.
Yeah, but again, and I'll go to Daniel in a moment, but now that I have you, and I'm going to talk to you, Imelda. I mean, so it's one thing to get them to come in, but if they need to, you need them to come back next year and the following year, depending on the length of the course that they're doing from there. But the supports are there for them. I mean, that's what you do.
Keith, absolutely. Like one-to-one support, as I particularly when Daniel comes on to his data, the increase in number of students registering with disabilities has increased hugely.
Isn't that great, though?
It's absolutely fantastic, Keith, you know, and I suppose it's also about the work of the university in terms of contributing to, you know, the Galway city in terms of being inclusive. We're trying to make Galway, we were a very diverse population in the city, and you know, the work that we do, we're trying to encourage everybody of every ability, of every background, that, you know, the University of Galway is a place for them, you know. But we have disability advisors, there's occupational therapists, psychologists, assistive technologists, as part of the multidisciplinary team, I suppose, we have a post-entry level in terms of supporting students to come in and successfully graduate.
All right, I'm joined by Daniel Savory, indeed, who's the widening participation officer. So you're the one that goes out and catch up. You're the catch-all person, is that what you are?
Well, Keith, I think thanks again for having us.
Can I pull you right into that there, if you don't mind?
It's very much a team effort within the Access Centre. I suppose I perform one element of that, so I'm very conscious to give kudos to the rest of the colleagues that I work with as well.
Good stuff. But you have some interesting statistics now. Imelda stole one of them when it comes to people with disabilities, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah. So just on the disability, within the report, we were keen to look at a number of different dimensions that we could kind of illustrate, I suppose, the progress that we've made with regards to widening participation. So we looked at the entry routes that Imelda's talked about, and we've seen an approximate 23% increase in students coming through these particular entry routes. If we aggregate them together over a 10-year period, that means that 24.7% of our undergraduate student population now is generally regarded as students who would be traditionally underrepresented in higher education. A big part of that figure as well is the 106% increase that we've seen with students with disabilities within the university. If we go back to about the
when
academic
you say 106%, I mean, was it a low level? Because 106% of an increase is an awful lot.
No. If you go back maybe to 2015-16, you're talking maybe about 680 students that would have been registered for disability support. That's 1,416, something like that.
Brilliant.
And that's a massive figure. We've seen huge increases, percentage increases in students registering who have mental health conditions, students who may have be hard of hearing or deaf. So we've seen some massive increases in some of those categories. It's a very, very busy service, and we're very, very conscious that not all students necessarily will register with us for disability support. Some, you know, choose to keep their disability hidden. And I suppose the point that we would love to get across is, and Imelda, I think, has alluded to, the Access Centre is open for business. We very much welcome students coming in. There are students who are entitled to these supports, and we would like them to avail of these supports. So, Keith, just say that figure is likely to increase.
I hope it does, and I hope it doubles and doubles again. And both your microphones are open. If somebody is on disability allowance, or they're on social welfare or otherwise, I suppose the concern is, am I going to lose it? Am I going to lose children's allowance? Am I going to, if I go back and the children are going to school and I can go and do this course and go back into education, do they lose anything, Imelda, or
no,
Daniel?
No, Keith. And I suppose,
that's,
you know,
an emphatic no.
Yeah, absolutely. and in fact, again, I might ask Daniel to comment on this. Like, you know, the current minister is hugely interested in this area, you know, and there is a national strategy called the National Access Plan. We're kind of in the fourth iteration of it now, but in the previous one, one of the programmes that they launched was bursaries, you know, additional bursaries, and Daniel manages that as well. And you might comment, Daniel, I suppose, in terms of the number of numbers of people that have increased.
Yeah, so thanks to the Higher Education Authority, we have what's called the 1916 bursary. A number of years ago when that was launched, there were 7 bursaries for University of Galway. And those bursaries are targeted at students whose income is below what's called the SUSE special rate, which is 24,500.
Okay.
And if you're from one of the target groups within that bursary, namely you're from the Irish Traveller community, you're a student who has a disability, you came through a further education course and so on, that has increased in the last few years. So rather than having 7 bursaries, this year we're in a position to be allocating approximately 50 different bursaries. Some of those students will receive 5,000 per year for the duration of their studies. Some will receive 2,000, and then a smaller number will receive once-off payments of 1,500. So there are financial supports, as well as supports like the University of Sanctuary Scholarship, as well as the Financial Aid Fund, as well as the Laptop Loan Scheme. We have this scaffold of support for students to ensure that they not only access university, but they can meaningfully participate and succeed.
It's a great, I mean, Carthy, your communications officer, was right when he said this is a very positive story.
100%, and you know we're very very keen.
He's not always right, by the way,
he's right in this situation, in this circumstance. I suppose we it's a rare opportunity for us to be able to put something down on paper like this. It's a rare opportunity for us who are working in this area, I suppose, to celebrate the achievements and recognise the work that we're doing. And I suppose with the launch of the report and the opening of the Access Centre, provided us an opportunity to do this. But we're conscious that this work never ends, and we want to keep going with it.
Is there a telephone number, Imelda, somebody wants to know, that they could give a call to?
Absolutely, 091-49-3553.
091-49-3553.
Yes.
And then get details from there. But it's important, just in the minute that we've left, the Access Centre in University of Galway is open for business.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Yeah, and what you want next time that we have you in, Daniel, you want to see the increase there again.
We want to see the increase, and in any future iterations of the reports, what we'd like is to hear about the lived experience of students. We're conscious that this report is very, very quantitative in nature. It's our first attempt, I suppose, to put these this data
out
there.
You need base data.
We need baseline data.
Yeah.
But again, the more we have of this baseline data and the more we get of the lived experience of students, the more comprehensive we will have of student experience, and we can tailor supports to those particular experiences. So, yeah.
It's a great success. Keep up the good work.
Thanks.
It's 20 years. I can't believe you're 20 years there.
Longer, Kate, 1999.
Okay.
But for those 23 years, as I said, you know, you have consistently, you know, met with students and participants and supported the work, you know. So
no, and we continue.
It's
continue
great to have
that
opportunity. Thanks, Keith, very much.
Not at all. Listen, thank you both for joining us. Further details can be had. Call them today, 091 49 35 53. That's 091 49 35 53. I'm going to play a bit of music to take us up to the top of the hour here. And this is the most recent song from our own Mark Roberts. It's called It's Christmas Time. It's been released this coming Friday. And you can pre-book it if you want. It's a lovely bit of music, and it will be going around in your head for the day.
Everyone's counting the hours, the minutes, for Christmas Day to arrive. The glory of heaven on earth at Christmas time. Sleigh bells and snowflakes, frost on the window, children with love in their eyes. The most wonderful time of year, it's Christmas time. And all through the year we have waited through summer and fall, just to hear the Savior is coming. Rejoice and be glad. Chestnuts are roasting, carolers singing, the star in the sky shines divine. And Santa is well on his way. It's Christmas time.
making your Christmas extra special with festive offers.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.